By my count, John Cusack has made upwards of 70 movies over the last 30 years. 70. From the young, love-struck, boombox-wielding heartthrob in Cameron Crowe's 1989 film Say Anything, to Richard Nixon in Lee Daniels' The Butler. Along the way, his signature brand of puppy dog, underdog, everyman has made and kept him a star. And here is the latest, and also very fine performance he can add to his list of roles. Cusack takes on the real-life rock and roll icon Brian Wilson of the Beach Boys in the new film Love and Mercy. John Cusack, welcome to Studio 360.
Thanks for having me.
You play Brian Wilson, the genius auteur of the Beach Boys. You play him when he's in his 40s in the 1980s, reclusive and under the care of his real-life controlling, sinister shrink, Dr. Eugene Landy. I want to play a clip from that part of the film. This is Dr. Landy and Brian going out to buy a Cadillac.
Do you know who this man is? Brian Wilson. Brian Wilson of the Beach Boys.
You didn't mention that.
Well, because that stuff doesn't matter. That's ego stuff, you know?
Are you kidding me? I love your music. I grew up on it. So thank you.
That makes me feel really good, Melinda Ledbetter.
Okay.
Melinda good enough. Ledbetter.
Right? It's a nice name. Why don't you get started on the paperwork, okay?
That is Paul Giamatti as Dr. Landy, you as Brian Wilson, and Elizabeth Banks as the Linda Ledbetter who becomes his girlfriend. How did you figure out how to play this guy? I mean, especially because he's a genius. He was famously mentally ill in the past. He's still living. It's a complicated thing.
It's a really complicated thing. And I think the key to it is that, you know, he's a complete paradox, which is he's on some level, he's just he's a feeling intuitive kind of a person. So he's like a heart with two legs that's walking around. But then he's really tough. You know, can endure a lot, is still here, and he's got an incredible kind of mental discipline, and he's a bit like a Cheshire Cat in that he knows exactly what's going on, but I think kind of like Bob Dylan in a way, he's there, but he's not there because everybody wants to know about his genius. So he has this defense mechanism from being famous and sensitive for so long that just when you think you have him pegged, he surprises you and can do the opposite. The power's in the paradox with Brian in a weird way.
Yeah.
And then he's there, so he's still alive, so you can talk to him and ask him some things, and you can ask him.
And you did?
Yeah, sure.
Yeah.
And he wanted he wants you to feel it, and right. He wanted it to feel true, and he also wanted to approach the mental difficulties that he had because I think there was a stigma to it, and he was misdiagnosed.
Right.
And
More of a stigma in the 60s, 70s, and 80s than probably now.
Yeah. But he's just a unformatted, completely unformatted, yeah. Free-spirited person who you know, there's not many like him.
Yeah. Paul Dano plays the younger Brian in the film, the Brian in his early 20s who created Pet Sounds and so forth. I was surprised to read that the two of you didn't, like, try to figure it out. How are we going to do this guy? Could it not worked? Totally worked. The two of you, different people playing this guy, not that far apart in age. But how come you didn't, like, you know, make him jive in advance somehow?
We know we can't. There is no definitive portrait of Brian Wilson, and certainly not in 2 hours.
Yeah.
And certainly not just in one book. And so, like, we could both write, you know, I could ask my family and I'd say, let's all write a book about my mom, and it would be four different versions of the same mother. So the conceit is that we're admitting that this is an album or two songs about Brian that hopefully, you know, so we didn't want to like compare notes and try to do the same character. We wanted my take based on Brian, you know, when he was trying to come out of the abyss of that terrible time in his life and Paul's before. And we hoped if we just used the music as the source, and we all went back to the Smile sessions and the music, that these two, you know, voices would harmonize into a nice song, maybe, if it works.
Well, and the director.
But it's a big leap of faith. But, you know, again, if you're making a movie about Brian Wilson, you can't go with some formatted. I mean, this is a guy who is a conjurer, an explorer. So,
and a big risk taker. So take a risk.
You have to take a risk. Yeah, so it was more like it wasn't saying like Paul and I can't talk to each other. We just kind of we just sort of looked at each other and but he said he came by. He was finishing up as I was starting and we overlapped and he came by my trailer and my trailer little room and he heard me blasting the Smile Sessions and I found out we talked later that, you know, since the Smile Sessions was the lost classic that he couldn't perform and that it broke his heart that people didn't want him to do it, we used that both as the fulcrum for this movie in a strange way. We listened to everything and immersed ourselves just in his music to the point where, you know, we were just breathing it.
Yeah. As somebody who has immersed themselves in his music, I want to play a song, a Beach Boys song for you. 50 years later, this is God Only Knows, and maybe you can talk over it and say, tell us, in your view, why this music was so revolutionary.
I may not always love you, but long as there are stars above you,
Paul McCartney said this was the greatest song ever written. Even George Martin, and this is a guy who produced Lennon and McCartney and the Beatles, said this is the greatest composer, songwriter, producer in the history of modern music.
Yeah.
So the complexity, the purity. And this song was written in response to Rubber Soul. So Brian heard Rubber Soul and he said, oh my God, I gotta go write something. And he wrote this in 45 minutes.
God only knows what I'd be without you.
When the Beatles heard this, there was this back and forth and it was almost like a friendly awe competition between the two. But when you think that George Martin, Lennon, McCartney, you know, there was a group and even though it might not have been easy, in the Beatles camp.
Yeah.
They were all on the same page and they were all working together. And Brian was doing all this with one ear in Los Angeles. It's extraordinary, but it also feels a little bit like sacrilege talking over Brian Wilson.
Okay. So I thought we would play this game we sometimes do with actors. I say the name of 10 of your films, and you just say the first thing that pops into your head.
Okay.
Okay?
Should I be in the polite, witty, brutally honest, or actually just incoherent mode?
I like all of them.
Because it's usually a kind of a mixture.
The mixture is fine.
And then also...
light on the incoherent, but otherwise fine.
Egomaniacal?
Yes, please.
Okay.
Please.
Self-involved?
Yes.
All right.
Okay.
And self-pitying?
That could work as a slight piece of the mix.
All right. Yeah. Okay. I'll throw it all
okay.
in.
Stand by Me.
Stephen King.
Say Anything.
The Clash.
Gross Point Blank.
Joe Strummer.
Con Air.
Sandals. Sandals. You want one word?
No, it can be a phrase.
Oh, first revolutionary cartoon action figure, first sandal-wearing, non-Charlton Heston action figure in the modern era, milestone achievement, turn the mic off.
Being John Malkovich.
It's hard being a puppeteer in today's wintry economic climate.
High Fidelity.
Chicago.
Midnight in the Garden of Good and Evil.
Savannah.
I could have said that.
I know. Okay, The Lady Chablis.
Nice. 2012.
Press Tour.
Hot Tub Time Machine.
An attempt to make something both profoundly dumb and intelligent.
Modern Culture in a Nutshell. At its best.
Oh, hey. I don't know about that. But yes.
The Butler.
Ellsberg.
Thank you. You win.
I did?
Well, yeah.
But I think I actually managed to both ruin it and win.
Well, there you go. I want to play a clip from one of my favorite films of yours, which is Spike Jonze's first film, Being John Malkovich.
There's a tiny door in my office, Maxine. It's a portal, and it takes you inside John Malkovich. You see the world through John Malkovich's eyes, and then after about 15 minutes, you're spit out into a ditch on the side of the New Jersey Turnpike.
Yeah.
Sounds great.
Who the f*** is John Malkovich?
That is you explaining to your coworker how you ended up inside John Malkovich. Being John Malkovich, to me, is one of the great, weird, funny films of all time. How did you come to be involved in it?
This is going to sound insane, but it's going to sound like me, which probably is insane. But when I my agents at the time, I said, you know, they said, well, we want to talk to the literary department and, like, tell me the scripts. I said, tell me your scripts that just no one will ever make and just the weirdest thing you have. And they said, well, you know, well, there's this or this or this. I go, no, I'm talking about, like, you know, come on, what's the script that just cannot be made and is the sickest, craziest? And then, well, there's, oh, well, there's Charlie Kaufman. But, and I said, oh, who? And so I just said,
huh.
And so an agent there at the time, you know, it was one of those kind of scripts that was a legendarily weird script.
So sometimes movie star hubris is a good thing.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And then I just said, you know, get me first in the door.
Yeah.
And it was kind of like, yeah, kind of like that.
You co-wrote and starred in High Fidelity in 2000. I want to play a clip from that film. This is you as Rob, the record store owner, with your sister, your older sister Joan, who plays your friend Liz.
You have got to stop calling her. You're really upsetting her and him.
I care about him.
Well, you should.
Why?
Because all you're doing is forming a little unit. Them against you. Before you started all this psychotic madness, there was no unit. There was just three people in a mess. But now they've got something in common. And you don't want to make anything worse.
How could it get any worse than Laura with Ian? Come on, Liz.
Can I ask you a question, and you can think about it if you want to?
Just what is it?
Why do you want Laura back so badly?
That is Joan Cusack and John Cusack in High Fidelity. I've got two sisters I love. I'm not sure I would want to work with them for weeks and months on a project. Is it completely great and frictionless when you two work together, which you've done more than once?
Well, yeah, because she's more talented than me, right? And if that was my movie, right? So, like, I've produced it. And,
yeah.
And
do you really think she's more talented than you?
Yeah.
That's
yeah,
not
yeah.
just brotherly humility, you know?
No. She's the most gifted performer in the family for sure.
Yeah.
And so it's, if you're just thinking it in pure mercenary terms, I can get her cheap, right? She'll show up.
Yeah.
Like if I call her, she'll show up to
work,
right?
Yeah.
You know, and
there's no handling and begging and
No. And it's fact, she doesn't really even answer the phone, so I have to go to her house to talk to her.
That's cute.
And if I give her a good part and I say, okay, you can work in Chicago and just come here, okay, she'll do it. And then anytime you do a scene with her, it's usually the audience's favorite scene in the movie or
uh-huh.
one of the audience's uh-huh. favorite scene in the movie. So then all boats rise. She does the heavy lifting and, you know, you don't have to explain anything to her. You just put the camera on her and then you just hold on. And so it's like, why
would win?
Yeah, everybody wins.
Yeah. Your sister also retains a much thicker Chicago accent than you do. You grew up in a Chicago suburb. You've lived around there forever. And you're about to shoot this Spike Lee movie set there called Chi-Raq, Chi-Town plus Iraq, which I was too stupid to understand until I read it about 10 times. The title has created a brouhaha of controversy in Chicago from political leaders who think it's blasphemous. What do you make of that?
I think, you know, out of respect to Spike Lee, you know, I'll let him present his film the way he wants to. But I can say that I'm very sure that the city of Chicago can survive a film of conscience just like it did Transformers.
I'm sure it can. John Cusack, thank you very much. It was a great pleasure talking to you.
You too, man.
Love and Mercy is out right now.